but Call couldn't help peeking inside. For a moment, he thought he was looking at mannequins, some standing upright and others leaning against the walls. But then, he realized two things. One, that their eyes were all closed, which would have been very strange for mannequins. And two, that their chests rose and fell as they breathed. Call froze, terrified. What was he looking at? What were they? Tamara turned and gave him a questioning look. He gestured toward the room and saw the look of horror cross her face as she followed his gesture. Her hand flew to her mouth, then, slowly, she inched away from the door, signaling for Call to do the same.
"Chaos-ridden,"
she whispered to him when they were far enough away that she'd stopped shaking. Call wasn't sure how she could tell without seeing their eyes, but decided he didn't want to know badly enough to ask. He was already so freaked out that he felt as though any movement was going to make him jump out of his skin. The last thing he needed was more terrifying information. If the chaos-ridden were here, it meant this had to be some outpost of the enemy. All those stories that Call had heard, the ones that had seemed to be about something that happened long ago, the ones he hadn't worried about, now flooded his head. The enemy had taken Aaron. Because Aaron was a Makkar. They'd been idiots to let him go outside the Magisterium alone. Of course the enemy would have found out about him and would want him destroyed. He was probably going to kill Aaron, if he hadn't already. Call's mouth felt as dry as paper, and he struggled to concentrate on their surroundings through his panic. The corridor's ceiling was getting higher as they made their way farther into the building. Along the walls, the blackened wood became regular wood paneling with a strange wallpaper above it. A pattern of vines that, if he looked carefully at, Call swore he could see insects moving inside. Shuddering, he tried to ignore everything but being quiet as he kept going. They passed several closed rooms before Havoc went up to a set of double doors and whined, then turned back to Call and Tamara expectantly.
"Shh,"
Call told him softly, and the wolf quieted, pawing once at the floor. The doors were huge, made of a dark, solid wood that bore a pattern of scorch marks, as if they had been licked by fire. Tamara put her hand on the knob, turned it, and peeked inside. Then she eased it closed and spun back to Call with wide eyes. He didn't think he'd ever seen her look so stunned, even by the chaos-ridden.
"Aaron,"
she whispered. But she didn't look elated like he would have expected. Didn't look happy at all. She looked like she was going to throw up. Call pushed past her to look.
"Call,"
Tamara hissed warningly.
"Don't. There's someone else there."
But Call was already leaning in, his eye pressed to the crack in the door. The room on the other side was huge, soaring up to massive, broad rafters that crisscrossed the ceiling. The walls were lined with empty cages, stacked on top of one another like crates. Cages made of iron. Their narrow bars were stained with something dark. From one of the rafters dangled Aaron. His uniform was torn, and his face scratched and bloody, but he looked mostly unharmed. He was hanging upside down, a heavy chain attached to a manacle on one of his ankles, rising to a pulley bolted to the ceiling. He was struggling, weakly, sending the chains swinging from side to side. Standing just below Aaron was a boy, small, skinny, and familiar, looking up and grinning a nasty grin. Call felt his stomach drop. It was Drew looking up at Aaron in his chains and grinning. He had a length of chain wrapped around one wrist. He was using it to lower Aaron toward a massive glass container filled with a roiling, roaring darkness. As Call stared at the darkness, it seemed to shift and change shape. An orange eye peered out from the shadows, shot through with pulsing green veins.
"You know what's in the container, don't you, Aaron?" said Drew.
His features twisted up into a sadistic smile.
"It's a friend of yours, a chaos elemental, and it wants to suck you dry."
Chapter 23. Tamara, who had bent down beside Call, made a choked sound.
"Drew!"
Aaron panted, in obvious pain. He reached out for the manacle around his ankle, then fell back as the chaos elemental lifted a shadowy tentacle. It took clearer form as the tentacle drew closer to Aaron, until it was almost solid, brushing his skin. He jerked and cried out in agony,
"Drew, let me go!"
"What? You can't get yourself free, Makar?"
Drew sneered, jerking on the chain so that Aaron rose a few feet out of reach of the chaos elemental.
"I thought you were supposed to be powerful, special. But you're not really special, are you? Not special at all."
"I never said I was,"
said Aaron in a choked voice.
"Do you know what it was like to have to pretend I was bad at magic? That I was a fool? To listen to Master Lemuel bemoan choosing me? I was better trained than all of you, but I couldn't show it, or Lemuel would have guessed who'd really trained me. I had to listen to the masters tell their stupid version of history and pretend I agreed, even though I knew that if it hadn't been for the mages and the assembly, the enemy would have given us the means to live forever. Do you know what it was like to learn that the Makar was some stupid kid from nowhere who would never do anything about his powers except what the mages told him to do?"
"So you're going to kill me,"
Aaron said,
"because of all that? Because I'm a Makar?"
Drew just laughed. Call turned away and saw that Tamara was shaking, her fingers wound tightly together.
"We have to get in there," he whispered to her. "We have to do something."
She rose to her feet, her wristband glittering in the shadows.
"The rafters. If we climb up there, we can haul Aaron out of the range of that thing."
Panic flooded him, because the plan was a good one. But when he imagined the climb and trying to balance his weight as he inched across the beam, he knew he couldn't do it. He'd slip. He'd fall. During the whole painful journey through the forest, with his legs stiff and aching, he'd told himself that he was going to help save Aaron. Now, when he was right in front of Aaron, Aaron in danger, Aaron needing saving, he was useless. The crush of despair was so awful that he considered not saying anything, just trying to climb and hoping for the best. But remembering the fear on Celia's face when she surfaced from the river, only to see Call lose control of the log and send it hurling toward her, decided him. If he made things worse by pretending he could help, he was only putting Aaron in more danger.
"I can't,"
Call said.
What?
Tamara asked, then glanced at his leg and looked embarrassed.
Oh, right. Well, just stay here with Havoc. I'll be right back. It's probably better with one person anyway. Sneakier.
At least he'd managed to seem capable for a while, Call thought. At least Tamara thought of him as a person who could do things and was surprised when he couldn't. It was cold comfort, but it was something. Then, suddenly, Call realized what he could do.
I'll distract him. What? No!
Tamara said, shaking her head for emphasis.
It's too dangerous. He's got a chaos elemental. Havoc will be with me, and freeing Aaron won't work otherwise.
Call looked her in the eye and hoped she could see that he wasn't going to back down.
Trust me.
Tamara nodded once. Then, with a quick smile at him, she slid through the door, the tread of her boots so soft that after two steps he could no longer make them out over Drew's giggles and the growl of the chaos elemental. He counted to 10.
1-1,000. 2-1,000. 3-1,000.
And then flung open the door as wide as it would go. Hey, Drew, Call said, plastering on a grin. This sure doesn't look like pony school to me. Drew jerked back so hard in surprise that he hauled on the chain, yanking Aaron several feet up. Aaron yelled out in pain, making Havoc growl.
Call?
Said Drew in disbelief. And Call flashed back to that night in the ditch, outside the magisterium, Drew shivering and shouting out for Call, his ankle snapped. Behind him, Call could see Tamara starting to climb the far wall, using the stacked cages as a sort of ladder, jamming her boots in between the bars, moving as silently as a cat.
What are you doing here?
Seriously? What am I doing here? Call demanded. What are you doing here? Besides trying to feed one of your fellow students to a chaos elemental, I mean seriously, what did Aaron do to you? Beat you on a test? Take the last piece of lichen at dinner?
Shut up, Call!
Do you really think you won't get caught?
I haven't gotten caught yet.
Drew seemed to be recovering from his surprise. He gave Call a nasty smile.
Was it all just an act?
All that stuff about Master Lemuel? All those times you pretended to be a regular student? Have you been a spy for the enemy all along? Call wasn't just playing for time now, he was curious. Drew looked the same, tangly brown hair, skinny, big blue eyes, freckles. But there was something behind his eyes Call hadn't seen before, something ugly and dark.
The masters are so stupid, said Drew, always worrying about what the enemy was doing outside the magisterium, worrying about the treaty, never thinking there could be a spy right among them. Even when I escaped the magisterium to send the enemy a message, what did they do?
He opened his blue eyes wide, and for a moment, Call caught a glimpse of the boy on the bus, sounding nervous about going to magic school.
Oh, Master Lemuel is so mean. He scares me. And they fired him.
Drew laughed, the innocent mask slipping away again, showing the coldness underneath. Havoc growled at that, sliding between Drew and Call.
What were you bringing the enemy a message about?
Call demanded. To his relief, Tamara was almost at the rafters.
Was it about Aaron? The Makar, said Drew. All these years the mages have waited for a Makar, but they're not the only ones. We were waiting too.
He jerked on the chain holding Aaron, who made a noise of pain, but Call didn't look up. He couldn't. He kept staring at Drew as if he could make Drew pay attention to nothing but him.
We? Call said.
because I just see one crazy person here. You.
Drew ignored his dig. He even ignored Havoc.
You can't think I'm in charge of this place, he said. Don't be stupid, Call. I bet you saw the chaos written, the elementals. I bet you can feel it. You know who's running this show.
Call swallowed.
The enemy, he said. The enemy isn't what you think.
Drew rattled the chain idly.
We could be friends, Call. I've been keeping an eye on you. We could be on the same side.
We really couldn't. Aaron's my friend, and the enemy wants him dead, doesn't he? He doesn't want another Makkar to challenge him.
It's so much fun, you don't know anything. You think Aaron's your friend. You think everything they told you in the Magisterium is true. It's not. They told Aaron they'd keep him safe, but they didn't. They couldn't.
He jerked on the chain holding Aaron, and Call winced, waiting for Aaron's cry of pain. It didn't come. Call looked up. Aaron was no longer dangling. Tamara had pulled him up to the rafter and was kneeling over him, her fingers feverishly working to undo the chain around his ankle.
No!
Drew yanked on the chain once more in a rage, but Tamara had broken it at her end. Drew let go as the chain came falling down.
Look, we're going to just leave now, said Call. I'm going to back out of here and— You're not leaving!
Drew shouted, racing forward to press his hand against the glass container. It was like he'd slid a key into a lock and opened a door, but way more violent. The container shattered, glass blowing in all directions. Call threw his hands up to cover his face as glass shards, like a rain of tiny needles, pierced his forearms. Wind seemed to be blowing through the room. Havoc was whimpering, and somewhere, Tamara and Aaron were yelling. Slowly, Call opened his eyes. The Chaos Elemental surged up in front of him, filling his view with shadows. Its darkness churned with half-formed faces and toothy mouths. Seven clawed arms reached out for him at once, some scaled, some hairy, and some as pale as dead flesh. Call gagged and staggered back a step. His hand slapped blindly at his side, his fingers closing around Miri's hilt, and he drew the blade from its sheath, swinging it out in front of him in a big, curving arc. Miri sank into something, something that gave under the blade like rotten fruit. Howls poured from the chaos monster's many mouths. There was a long gash down one of its arms, darkness pouring out of the wound to swirl in the air like smoke from a fire. Another arm tried to grab him, but Call dropped to the ground and it succeeded only in grazing his shoulder. Where it had touched, though, his arm went instantly numb and Miri dropped from his fingers. Call struggled up, onto his elbow, trying to reach across his body with his good hand, scrabbling for Miri, but he was out of time. The elemental lunged, rolling toward him across the floor like an oil slick, a huge, toad-like tongue slithering out, right for Call. With a howl, Havoc threw himself into the air, landing directly atop the back of the elemental. His teeth sank into its slick surface, his claws piercing the roiling darkness. The monster spasmed, rearing back. Heads exploded out all over its body, arms shooting out to grab for Havoc, but the wolf held on, riding the monster. Seeing his chance, Call scrambled to his feet, grabbing Miri with his good hand. He lunged forward and sank the knife into what he thought was the elemental's side. The blade came away covered in dripping black, halfway between smoke and oil. The Chaos Elemental roared and thrashed, hurling havoc off. The wolf flew and hit the floor on the far side of the room, near a pair of doors. He whimpered once, and then was still. "Havoc!" Call shouted, darting toward his wolf. He was halfway there when he heard a growling behind him. He whirled on the Chaos Elemental. Rage was pouring through him. If the creature had hurt Havoc, he would cut it up into a thousand gross, oily pieces. He stalked forward, Miri flashing in his hand. The Chaos Elemental shrank back, darkness puddling around it, as though no longer so eager to fight.
"Go on, you coward!" screamed Drew, kicking at it. "Grab him! Do it, you big stupid lump!"
The Chaos Elemental sprang, but not at Call. Twisting around, it lunged at Drew. Drew screamed once, and then the Elemental was on him, rolling over him like a wave. Call stood frozen, Miri in his hand. He thought of the icy pain that had shot through him at just a touch of the Chaos creature's substance, and now that substance was sinking down over Drew, who was jerking and twisting in its grip, his eyes rolling back to the whites.
"Call!"
The voice yanked Call out of his shock. It was Tamara, yelling down to him from the rafters. She was on her knees, and Aaron was beside her. The manacle and chains were a twisted pile. Aaron was free, though his wrists were braceleted with blood where he had clearly been tied up, probably when they had dragged him from the Magisterium. And Call bet his ankles were in even worse shape.
"Call, get out of there!"
"I can't."
Call pointed with Miri. The Chaos Elemental and Drew were between him and the door.
"Go that way," Tamara said, pointing to the doors behind him. "Look for anything, a window, anything. We'll meet you outside."
Call nodded once, lifting Havoc.
"Please," he thought. "Please."
The body in his arms was warm, and as he pressed the wolf against his chest, he could feel the steady beat of Havoc's heart. The extra weight hurt his legs, but he didn't care.
"He's going to be okay,"
he told himself firmly.
"Now move."
Looking back, he saw that Tamara and Aaron were shinnying down from the rafters, close to the other door. But as he looked up, the Chaos Elemental rose from where it was hunched over Drew. Several mouths opened, and a whip-like purple tongue lashed out to taste the air with its forked tip. Then, it started to move toward Call. Call yelled and jumped back. Havoc jerked in his arms, barked, and leaped to the ground. He ran toward the doors at the far end of the room, Call right behind him. They crashed through the doors together, nearly knocking them off their hinges. Havoc came to a skidding stop. Call nearly fell over him and barely righted himself. He stared around the room. It looked a lot like the laboratory of Dr. Frankenstein. Beakers of odd-colored liquids bubbled all around. Massive machinery hung from the ceiling, wheeling and turning, and the walls were lined with cages full of elementals of various sizes, quite a few of them glowing brightly. Then, Call heard it behind him, a thick, bubbling growl. The Chaos Elemental had followed them into the room and was sailing after them, a massive, dark cloud covered in claws and teeth. Call jerked into an uneven run again, sending beakers of liquid crashing to the floor as he hurtled toward what looked like a display of old weapons on one of the walls. If he went for the elemental with that hefty-looking axe, maybe...
"Stop!"
A man in hooded black robes strode from behind a huge bookcase. His face was shrouded in darkness, and he swung a massive staff, topped with onyx. Havoc, on seeing him, let out a whimper and dove under one of the nearest tables. Call froze. The stranger swept past him without a glance and raised his staff.
Enough,
he cried in a deep voice, and pointed the onyx end of the staff toward the elemental. Darkness exploded from the tip, shooting across the room toward the beast, striking it squarely. The darkness swelled and grew, wrapping the elemental, swallowing it into nothingness. It gave a last, horrible, bubbling cry, and vanished. The man turned toward Call and slowly drew back the hood of his robes. His face was half hidden by a silver mask that covered his eyes and nose. Below it, Call could see the jut of a chin, a neck slashed with white scars. The scars were new, but the mask was familiar. Call had seen it before in pictures, had heard it described, a mask worn to cover the scars of an explosion that had almost killed the wearer. A mask worn to terrify. A mask worn by the enemy of death.
Column Hunt,
said the enemy.
I was hoping it would be you.
Whatever Call had expected the enemy to say, it wasn't that. He opened his mouth, but only a whisper came out.
You're Constantine Madden, he said. The enemy of death.
The enemy moved toward him, a swirl of black and silver.
Stand up, he said. Let me look at you.
Slowly, Call pulled himself to his feet and stood facing the enemy of death.
The room was almost silent. Even Havoc's whimpers seemed faint and far away. Look at you, said the enemy.
There was an odd sort of pleasure in his voice.
It's a pity about the leg, of course. But that won't matter in the end. I suppose Alistair preferred to leave you as you were than dabble in healing magic. He always was stubborn. And now it's too late. Did you ever think of that, Colum? That perhaps if Alistair Hunt had been a little less stubborn, you might have been able to walk properly?
Call hadn't thought of it, but now the thought lodged like a cold piece of ice in his throat, choking off his words. He took a step away, until his back hit one of the long tables full of jars and beakers.
He froze. But your eyes...
And now the enemy sounded gloating, though Call couldn't figure out what about his eyes might be worth gloating over. He felt dizzy with confusion.
They say eyes are the windows of the soul. I asked Drew quite a lot of questions about you, but I never thought to ask about your eyes.
He frowned, the scarred skin tightening beneath the mask.
Drew,
he said.
Where is the boy?
He raised his voice.
Drew!
There was silence. Call wondered what would happen if he reached behind himself, grabbed one of the beakers or jars and threw it at the enemy. Could he buy himself time? Could he run?
Drew,
said the mage again, and now there was something else in his voice, something like alarm. He strode past Call impatiently, stalking through the double doors into the wooden chamber beyond. There was a long moment of utter silence. Call looked around desperately, trying to see if there were any other doors, any other ways out of this room besides the way he'd come in. There weren't. There were only bookshelves piled with dusty tomes, tables loaded with alchemical materials, and, high up the walls, small fire elementals set into hammered copper niches, lighting the room with their glow. The elementals stared down at Call with their blank, black eyes as he heard the noise from the other room. A long, keening cry of grief and despair.
Drew!
Havoc wailed. Call picked up one of the glass beakers and staggered to the double doors. Pain was shooting through his leg, up into his body like razor blades stabbing through his veins. He wanted to fall over. He wanted to lie on the ground and let unconsciousness take him. He grabbed for the arch of the doorway and stared. The enemy was on his knees. Drew lying half across his lap, limp and unresponsive. His skin had already begun to turn a cold blue color. He was never going to wake up again. Call's heart gave a dull thud of horror. He couldn't seem to wrench his gaze away from the enemy hunched over Drew's body, his staff lying discarded on the floor beside him, his scarred hands raked through Drew's hair again. And again.
"My son," he whispered. "My poor son."
His son? Call thought. Drew is the enemy of Death's son? Suddenly, the enemy's head jerked up. Even through the mask, Call could sense the glare of his eyes. They were bent on Call, and they were black with laser-like fury.
"You!"
he hissed.
"You did this! You unleashed the elemental that killed my child!"
Call swallowed and backed up, but the enemy was already rising, seizing his staff. He swung it toward Call, and Call stumbled, the beaker flying out of his hand to shatter on the floor. He went down on one knee, his bent legs screaming in pain. "I didn't," he began. "It was an accident."
"Get up,"
snarled the enemy.
"Get up, Column Hunt, and face me."
Slowly, Call rose to his feet and faced the silver-masked man across the room. Call was shaking all over, shaking from the pain in his legs and from the tension in his body, from fear and adrenaline and the thwarted desire to run. The enemy's face was set in a furious expression, his eyes glittering with rage and grief. Call wanted to open his mouth, wanted to say something in his own defense, but there was nothing. Drew lay unmoving, still and vacant-eyed among the smashed remains of the glass container. He was dead. And it was Call's fault. He couldn't explain himself, couldn't defend himself. He was facing the enemy of Death, who had slain whole armies. He would hardly hesitate at one single boy. Call's hand slipped from Miri's hilt. There was only one thing left to do. Taking a deep breath, he got ready to die. He hoped that Tamara and Aaron had made it past the chaos ridden, out the window, and back on the path toward the Magisterium. He hoped that since Havoc was chaos ridden, the enemy wouldn't be too hard on him for not being an evil zombie dog.
He hoped his dad wouldn't be too mad at him for going to the Magisterium and getting killed, just the way he had always been warned he would. He hoped Master Rufus wouldn't give his spot to Jasper. The mage was close enough that Call could feel the heat of his breathing, could see the twist of his narrow mouth, the glint of his eyes, and the tremors that ran through his whole body. "If you're going to kill me," Call said, "go ahead. Do it." The mage raised his staff and flung it aside. He dropped to his knees, his head bent, his whole posture one of supplication, as if he were begging Call for mercy.
"Master, my master," he rasped, "forgive me. I did not see."
Call stared in confusion. What did he mean?
"This is a test of my loyalty and commitment."
The enemy took a ragged breath. It was clear that he was barely controlling himself through sheer force of will.
"If you, my master, decreed that Drew must die, then his death must be to a greater purpose."
The words seemed sliced out of his throat, as if it pained him to speak them.
"Now, I too have a personal stake in our quest. My master is wise, as always. He is wise."
"What?" Call said, his voice trembling. "I don't understand. Your master? Aren't you the enemy of death?" To Call's utter shock, the mage raised his hands and drew off the silver mask, bearing the face beneath it. It was a scarred face, an old, lined, weathered face. It was a strangely familiar face, but it was not the face of Constantine Madden.
"No, Gollum Hunt. I am not the enemy of death," he said. "You are."
Chapter 24.
"What?" Call gaped. "Who are you? Why are you telling me this?"
"Because it's the truth,"
said the mage, holding the silver mask in his hand.
"You are Constantine Madden, and if you look at me closely, you will know my name as well."
The mage was still kneeling at Call's feet, his mouth beginning to twist into a bitter smile.
"He's insane," Call thought. "He has to be. What he's saying doesn't make any sense."
But the familiarity of his face. Call had seen him before, at least in photographs.
"Your Master Joseph," Call said.
"You taught the enemy of death."
"I taught you,"
said Master Joseph.
"May I rise, Master?"
Call said nothing.
"I'm trapped," he thought. "I'm trapped in here with an insane mage and a dead body."
Apparently taking this as permission, Master Joseph stood with some effort.
"Drew said that your memories were gone. But I couldn't believe it. I thought that when you saw me, when I told you the truth about yourself, you might recall something. No matter. You may not remember, but I assure you, Gollum Hunt, the spark of life within you, the soul, if you will, all that animates the shell of your body belongs to Constantine Madden. The real Gollum Hunt died as a mewling baby."
"This is crazy," Call said. "Things like that, they don't happen. You can't just swap souls."
true.
I cannot, said the mage.
But you can. If you will permit me, master.
He held out his hand. After a moment, Call realized that he was asking for permission to take Call's hand in his. Call knew he shouldn't touch Master Joseph. Much of magic was communicated through touch. Touching elements. Drawing their power through you. But even though what Master Joseph was saying was insane, there was something in it that pulled at Call, something his mind couldn't let go of. Slowly, he held out his hand, and Master Joseph took it, wrapping his wide, scarred fingers around Call's smaller ones.
See,
he whispered, and an electric jolt went through Call. His vision whitened, and all of a sudden it was like he was seeing scenes projected onto a massive screen in front of him. He saw two armies facing off against each other on a vast plain. It was a mage war. Explosions of fire, arrows of ice, and gusts of gale-force wind hurtled among the fighters. Call saw familiar faces. A much younger Master Rufus, a teenage Master Lemuel, Tamara's mother and father, and, riding a fire elemental at the head of them all, Verity Torres. Chaos magic spilled darkly from her outstretched hands as she hurtled across the field. Master Joseph rose up, a heavy object in his hand. It glittered the color of copper. It looked like a copper claw, fingers outstretched like talons. He gathered a burst of wind magic and sent it sailing through the air. It buried itself in Verity's throat. She fell backward, blood ribboning through the air, and the fire elemental she had been riding howled and reared back. A bolt of lightning shot from its claws. It struck Master Joseph, and he fell, his silver mask dislodging to show his face beneath.
"It's not Constantine!"
cried a hoarse voice. Alistair Hunt's voice.
"It's Master Joseph!"
The scene shifted. Master Joseph stood in a room made of scarlet marble. He was shouting at a group of cowering mages.
"Where is he? I demand that you tell me what happened to him!"
The heavy tread of feet came from the open door. The mages broke apart, creating an aisle down which marched four of the chaos-ridden, carrying a body between them. The body of a young man with blonde hair, a huge wound in his chest, his clothes soaked in blood. They set the body down at Joseph's feet. Master Joseph crumpled, taking the body of the young man in his arms.
"Master,"
he hissed.
"Oh, my master, death's enemy."
The boy's eyes opened. They were gray. Call had never seen Constantine Madden's eyes before, never thought to ask what color they were. They were the same gray as Call's. Gray and empty as a winter sky. His scarred face was slack, emotionless. Master Joseph gasped.
"What is this?"
he demanded, turning to the other mages with fury on his face.
"His body lives, if barely, but his soul, where is his soul?"
The scene shifted again. Call was standing in a cave carved of ice. The walls were white, shifting in color where shadows touched them. The floor was scattered with bodies, mages lying crumpled, some with their eyes open, some in pools of frozen blood. Call knew where he was. The Cold Massacre. He closed his eyes, but it made no difference. He could still see, since the images were inside his mind. He watched Master Joseph pick his way among the murdered, stopping, here and there, to turn over a body and stare at its face. After a few moments, Cole realized what he was doing. He was examining the dead children, not touching the adults. At last, he stopped and stared, and Cole saw what he was looking at. Not a body at all, but a set of words, carved into the ice. Kill the child. Again the scenes shifted, and now they were fluttering by fast, like leaves in a breeze. Master Joseph in one town or city after another, searching, always searching, examining the birth records in a hospital, property records, any possible lead. Master Joseph standing on the concrete of a playground, watching a group of boys threatening a smaller boy. Suddenly, the ground underfoot shook and trembled, a huge crack splitting the playground nearly in half. As the bullies ran off, the smaller boy on the ground levered himself up, gazing around with a bewildered look. Cole recognized himself. Skinny, dark-haired, with gray eyes just like Constantine's, his bad leg twisted beneath him. He felt Master Joseph begin to smile. Cole came back to reality with a shock, as if he had slammed into his body from a great height. He staggered back, yanking his hand out of Master Joseph's.
No.
He choked.
No. I don't understand.
Oh, I think you do, said the mage. I think you understand very well. Colum Hunt.
Stop that, Cole said. Stop calling me Colum Hunt like that. It's creepy. My name is Cole.
No, it's not,
said Master Joseph.
That's the name that belongs to that body, that shell you wear. A name that you will discard when you are ready, just as you will discard that body and enter Constantine's.
Cole threw up his hands. I can't do that. And do you know why? Because Constantine Madden is still around. I really, really don't understand how I can be this person that's out leading armies and raising chaos elementals and making giant wolves with freaky eyes when that person already exists and is somebody else.
Cole was shouting, but his voice sounded pleading, even to his own ears. He just wanted all this to stop. He couldn't help hearing the horrible echo of his father's words again and again. Cole, you must listen to me. You don't know what you are.
Still around?
Master Joseph said with a bitter smile.
Oh, the Assembly and the Magisterium believe that Constantine is still actively engaged with the world, because that is what we wished them to believe. But who has seen him? Who has spoken to him since the Cold Massacre?
People have seen him, Call began. He's met with the Assembly. He signed the treaty.
Masked?
Said Master Joseph, holding up the silver mask he had been wearing when Cole had first seen him.
I impersonated him at the battle with Verity Torres.
I knew I could do it again.
The enemy has remained hidden since the Cold Massacre, and when he absolutely had to show himself, I went in his place. But Constantine himself? He was mortally wounded 12 years ago, in the cave where Sarah Hunt and so many others died. But as he felt the life ebbing from him, he used what he had already learned, the method of moving one soul to another body, to save himself, just like he was able to take a piece of chaos and place it inside the chaos-ridden, he took his own soul and placed it inside the optimal vessel at hand. You.
But I was never at the Cold Massacre. I was born in a hospital. My leg—
A lie. Told to you by Alistair Hunt.
Your leg was shattered when Sarah Hunt dropped you onto the ice, said Master Joseph.
She knew what had happened. The soul of her child had been forced out, and the soul of Constantine Madden took its place. Her child had become the enemy.
Call heard a roaring in his ears. My mother wouldn't—
Your mother,
sneered Master Joseph.
Sarah Hunt was only the mother of the shell that contains you. Even she knew it. She didn't have the strength to do it herself, but she left a message. A message for those who would come upon the battlefield after she was dead.
The words in the ice,
Cole whispered. He felt dizzy and sick.
Kill the child,
said Master Joseph, with a cruel satisfaction.
She scratched it into the ice with the tip of that knife you carry. It was her last act in this world.
Cole felt as if he were about to throw up. He reached behind him for the edge of a table and leaned back against it, breathing hard.
The soul of Colum Hunt is dead, said Joseph. Forced from your body, that soul shriveled up and died. Constantine Madden's soul has taken root and grown, newborn and intact. Since then, his followers have labored to make it seem like he wasn't gone from the world so that you would be safe.
Protected. So that you would have time to mature. So that you would live.
Call wants to live.
That was what Call had, jokingly, added to the sing-cane in his mind. Now it didn't seem like a joke. Now, in horror, he wondered just how true it was. Had he wanted to live so much that he'd stolen another person's life? Could that have really been him?
I don't remember anything about being Constantine Madden,
Call whispered.
I've only ever been me.
Constantine always knew he could die, said Joseph. It was his greatest fear, death. He tried again and again to bring back his brother, but he could never recover his brother's soul, all that made Jericho who he was. He resolved to do whatever it took to remain alive.
All this time we have waited, Call, for you to be old enough, and here you are,
nearly ready.
Soon the war will begin again in earnest, and this time we are sure to win.
Master Joseph's eyes were shining with something that seemed a lot like madness.
I don't see why you think I'd ever be on your side, Call said. You took Aaron.
Yes, said Joseph.
But we wanted you.
So you went through all that effort, the kidnapping, just to get me here to—
What?
To tell me all this? Why not tell me before? Why not grab me before I even ever went to the Magisterium?
Because we thought you knew.
Master Joseph ground out.
I thought you were lying low on purpose, allowing your mind and body to grow so that you might once again become the formidable foe to the Assembly that you were before. I did not approach you because I assumed that if you wished to be approached, you would have contacted me.
Call laughed bitterly.
So you didn't come near me because you didn't want to blow my cover, and all that time I didn't even know I had a cover? That's freaking hilarious!
I see nothing amusing about it.
Master Joseph didn't change expression.
It is fortunate that my son, that Drew, was able to ascertain that you had no idea who you really are, or you might have inadvertently given yourself away.
Call stared at Master Joseph. Are you going to kill me? He asked abruptly.
Kill you?
I've been waiting for you, Joseph said, all these many years.
Well, your whole stupid plan has been for nothing then, Cole said. I am going to go back and tell Master Rufus who I really am. I am going to tell everyone at the Magisterium that my father was right and that they should have listened to him. And I'm going to stop you.
Master Joseph smiled, shaking his head.
I think I know you a little better than that, in any guise. You'll go back and you'll finish your iron year, and when you return for your copper year, we'll talk again.
No, we won't. Call felt childish and small, the weight of the horror overwhelming him. I'll tell them.
Tell them what you are?
They'll bind your magic.
They won't.
They will,
said Master Joseph.
If they don't kill you. They'll bind your magic, and they'll send you away to a father who knows now for certain that he is not your father.
Call swallowed hard. He hadn't thought, until this moment, what Alistair's reaction would be to this revelation. His father, who had begged Rufus to bind his magic. Just in case.
You'll lose your friends. Do you really think they'd let you close to their precious Makar? Knowing who you are? They will raise Aaron Stewart to be your enemy. That's what they've been looking for all this time. That's what Aaron is. He is not your companion. He is your destruction.
Aaron's my friend, Call said in a hopeless sort of voice. He could hear how he sounded, but he couldn't stop it.
As you say, Call.
Master Joseph had the serene look of a man who knew better.
It seems your friend has some choices ahead of him. As do you.
I choose, said Call. I choose to go back to the Magisterium and tell them the truth.
Joseph smiled a glittering smile.
Do you? He said. It is easy enough to stand here and throw your defiance at me. I would have expected nothing less from Constantine Madden. You were always defiant.
But when it comes down to the wire, when the choice must be made, will you really give up everything that matters to you for the sake of an abstract ideal you only partly understand?
Call shook his head. But I'd have to give it up anyway. You're not exactly going to let me go back to the Magisterium.
Of course I am,
Master Joseph said. Call jolted back, slamming his elbow painfully into the wall behind him.
What?
Oh, my master, the older mage breathed. Don't you see?
He never finished his sentence. With an enormous crash, the roof tore itself apart. Call barely had time to look up before everything overhead seemed to explode in a shower of splintered wood and concrete. He heard Master Joseph's hoarse shout, just before a mountain of rubble poured down between them, obscuring the mage from view. The ground buckled under Call, who fell sideways, throwing out his arm to pin a squirming, panicked Havoc. Everything shook for another moment, and Call buried his face in the wolf's fur, trying not to choke on the thick, swirling dust. Maybe the world was ending. Maybe Master Joseph's allies had decided to blow the whole place up. He didn't know. And he almost didn't care.
Call?
Through the ringing in his ears, Call heard the familiar voice.
Tamara.
He rolled over, one hand still gripped in Havoc's fur, and saw what had ripped the building apart. The huge sign that read, Mountain Bowling, had plunged through the roof, slicing the building in half like an axe plunging through a concrete block. Aaron was crouching on top of the sign, as if he had ridden it down through the air, Tamara behind him. The sign was sparking and hissing where electrical wires had been